You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. A busy Cocoa, Florida today. Lots of maneuvering on the road, lots of detours. But anyways, we're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And all over the planet on the World Wide Web.
That's right. www.1510wwbc.com. You can go to any one of those archived pages by date and get all of our downloads. Lots of years worth of guests, Sita. And then, of course, if you want to listen live to us today, you can get us on any one of your streaming devices. That just click that 1510wwbc. Just click that listen live button and you'll get us live. We're heard all over the world. And then, of course, everything is shared on our Facebook pages, Sita Media Inc., Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and then, of course, on Sita's personal page, and also on our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right.
We've got so many channels and so many fantastic guests.
We do. And somebody actually sent me a text over the weekend that she wanted to support Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And I assured her that our show is not a political show. Mm-hmm. Our show is for everyone who has a platform and wants to talk about a book, a product, a service, opening a business. Maybe they want to talk about a nonprofit, something they're doing great in the community. I said, we give everyone equal opportunity on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And so she is going to support our show. Awesome. Which is really, really nice.
Well, and it's, I don't think, I think the activists sometimes give sometimes a political flair to it, you know,
right.
They think that it's a political flair, but it's really just people that are concerned about their communities, much like the guests that we have today, and people that want to see a change and a difference in their world. You know, you always say that, right? That's one of your favorite sayings by Mahatma Gandhi.
Right.
Of be the change that you wish to see.
Well, you know what it is? People have to live what they say. And our guest, Connie, will talk a little bit about that in a minute. But so for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, or maybe you tuned in and then you forgot about us and now you're back with us again, our show is what we like to say is like kitchen table topics. It's almost like you're sitting down with your aunties and your cousins and your friends and neighbors and having a conversation, except Danny here won't let us have any coffee in the studio.
That's right.
Because he said we mess it up. But anyways, so we talk about people with people on our show, our guests, and we talk about things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida, and all over the world. And we are very blessed that our guests will speak about money management, financial literacy, running for office. Maybe somebody had an aha moment and they wrote a book, they wrote an article, whatever it is, hospice, environmental, gentrification, whatever it is. People like to talk with us here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And our two guests today, we were supposed to have State Representative Rita Harris with us. She is the representative for Orlando, Florida, but of course she was tied up in a meeting this morning and she could not come in person, but she will call in on the second segment. Our first segment is with author Connie Johnson, and I have to apologize to Connie when she actually started speaking with us. I had to reschedule her a few times because, you know, we've had so many guests down with illnesses and COVID and stuff that we had to juggle all our guests. So author Connie Johnson is a shining example of the resilience and the awesome power of the human spirit. She was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and graduated from Harding High. And you were asking me where she's calling in from, Elle. There we have it.
Yeah.
She furthered her education at Dorsey Business College. And I'm going to speak to her about her book, but she's going to talk to us about her resilience, her young family, and how they experienced a devastating feeling and the state of being in homelessness in 2015. And I think what I got from her and her bio is through fate and determination, she was able to accomplish so much more after that. Fate seemed to be a recurrent theme in so many people's lives, and I love hearing about it. So, Connie, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for this opportunity to be on your platform. I am so excited. I thank you.
I thank you, too, and I had the opportunity to review some of your writing, some of your videos.
Connie, if I could ask you to make sure that you have everything muted in the background, so don't have the radio on because it's giving us feedback here at the station.
Oh, not a problem.
Thank you.
It happens sometimes.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, you know, you are as real as they come, my friend, and I am so grateful that you're taking the time to call in and talk to our listeners about taking back the community and networking and helping others in your community to achieve so much. You talk to our listeners a little bit about yourself and some of your accomplishments, and my goodness, you also had a bill passed legislation-wise and all these great things. So to lead us through and tell us a little bit about yourself. Hello? Oh, what happened?
Oh, goodness. She may have.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Oh, you walked away to turn things down. Oh, yeah, we can. I said if you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and some of your accomplishments, I would really appreciate it.
Yes. My name is Connie Johnson. I am a native of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Now I reside in Virginia. And so basically, you know, God has used me for a purpose. And when you utilize your purpose and you share your gifts with all those who are in need, I saw a need in my community. And I moved from, I went from town to town. My mother had the audacity to keep moving us from city to city. And I'm saying audacity, but it was a really great thing.
Yes.
And we moved from Bridgeport to Detroit, and I learned Black history when I was in Detroit. Moved from Detroit to Richmond, I learned the spirit of unity. I took those two components, moved back to my hometown where there was a negative environment when I was young. A lot of bullying from not only the adults, but the youth. I feared for my sisters. Every day they had to try and find a way home to, you know, basically get home because girls kept on wanting to fight them. They had beautiful looks and a lot of bullying and all that going on. So I'm glad my mother took us out that environment in Bridgeport, Connecticut. But I was able to bring two things back with me. That was unity and Black history. And I brought it back, and I saw a need in my community, started taking back our community. And the first year of it, it was a great success, dealing with challenged behavior adults. And I went on to help the youth as well. And with that being said, I had to move from one place to another because it was so loud. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, we're hearing you. It sounds like you're sitting right next to us here in the studio.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, so, you know, basically I saw a need in the community, and, you know, News 12 came out, my first youth event. It was a 3-on-3 back to school, and they asked me this question about, oh, are you taking back the community because of the games and everything like that? And so I kind of thought it was a trick question because, you know, if I would have went into that realm, it would have been like, oh, you know, no. I said, no. I saw me, and I stepped up, tried to help these youth because they kept fighting each other. They don't know their identity. They're not being taught our identity. Thank God my mother moved me to Detroit so I could start studying more about who I am. Because when you lack pride and dignity and respect, you're not going to love yourself, and therefore you're going to hate each other. And so I started to form annual events the first year. It was only maybe 30 kids that showed up.
Yes.
And then the next year, it was close to 1,000 kids. And when I tell you, I'm like, those 30 kids went and told everybody about how that was our best year. That first year was our greatest year.
And what year was that?
That was in 2007, 2008 was our first annual back to school.
Yeah, and you created lasting memories by using your Christian values, and you united so many people. That seems to be a recurring theme with you, that you do, your mission is the power and the love of Jesus Christ. You wrote on your website, I read that, and it's all about bringing awareness and empowerment and advocacy to your community, and building the characters of the people that attend your events. How wonderful that is.
Amen. You know, the thing about Christ, he was a carpenter, which was symbolic of what he did spiritually. And what he did spiritually, he built lives, he built relationships, and eventually he built communities. And that was only through the power of love. And he had a sound mind in doing it. And so he commissioned us to do the same, go and out into the world and make disciples. And so, therefore, I always kept that in mind, how he was so symbolic in building with his hammer. And that's where I got that book, that name of the book, If I Had a Hammer. And, you know, Peter and Mary, they wrote that song, If I Had a Hammer, a hammer in the morning.
I remember that song.
So you became a target. You lost your home, you lost your job, and you had to rebuild your life. You needed your own hammer to rebuild. So talk to us a little bit about the homelessness that you experienced. What happened to cause that?
Oh my goodness. It seemed like I kept being homeless. Yeah, when I was fighting for our people, you know, when my husband and I were in Detroit, we were a couple that made close to six figures. And so we separated, moved back home, and I left Detroit with nothing on my back, only to rent a car. Slept in my mother's basement. And so I applied for Habitat for Humanity. And so Habitat had accepted us. We were excited. We had our family, $500. And so what I noticed, I'm sorry about that. What I noticed about, everyone was complaining about, you know, I don't want to get too much into, because not all habitats are the same. We have wonderful habitats out there, but this particular community was corrupt. A lot of people, it was like three pages full of foreclosures. When I started questioning, that's when I became a target. You know, I started questioning why we're not getting help for our people. You know, why is there's so many pages of foreclosure? Can't you come up with something that would help our people? Because, you know, a lot of their stories were legit, you know.
The community, you saw that the communities were getting very weakened. Something was going on, and people, and you questioned the judicial system, the police system. You questioned why the youths had nowhere to go, after school activities. You had valid questions.
I had valid questions, and of course, you can't come with questions, not with a land full of narcissistic people, and I'm not saying that to be mean, but this is what we're experiencing now, a lot of, you know, controlling, manipulative spirits that's out there, and I'm not saying any names, but this is what our world has come to resort it to, and so you can't question no one like that. So when you do, yes, we become a target. And so basically, I faced the system. I went in the court process. Their attorneys had stepped down because I had valuable evidence that, you know, I owned the rights, title, claim, and demand for my deed. But they came up with three mortgages out of the blue. And so basically, they had power behind them, which was the system. And so we were thrown out our home, and we still build, you know. The people in our street just cried. The young ladies and young men, young boys cried when they saw our things thrown. It wasn't thrown out. They put it on a U-Haul truck. But they didn't see me sweat. They didn't see me cry. And I wanted to make sure I send that example to my children. No matter what you go through, don't see you cry. I cried behind closed doors, but I didn't let them see me cry. I kept my head held high, and we continued to build. I was I was unemployed. They laid me off too. I lost everything. It was everything back to back to back. My girls, we didn't get on the state. We didn't do any of that. We gelled together. We worked through it. We built through it. And so I was volunteering for a whole year in Bassett High School. They end up hiring me. And that's another journey I went on with the youth. We had started a ministry with the girls. It's called We Are Sets Student Empowerment Team. and that student empowerment team were, they put all the games, you know how they redline, they rezone, and divide and conquer. They put all the games in one school, and you know, and they were rival games, not knowing that God was going to put little on me to counteract their agenda.
Yeah, you accomplish what so many city officials fail to do. You were able to create an environment for the youths by organizing and using your skills and, of course, your faith.
Mm-hmm. Opposition. And it wasn't me. Little old Connie couldn't do it. But it was the power in Christ that was in me that gave me the strength and the perseverance and the courage to take on such a task.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of the things that you started seeing as far as changes in your community?
The changes that I saw in the community, it was quite, everybody started jumping aboard. They started hopping because they saw that the youth were building relationships now instead of fighting. And so News 12 had did a report on me. It was a news flash. It was a news breaking. And they interviewed me because they claimed that they said that I changed Stratford, Connecticut community around. And then my neighbors had vouched for that. And that's when the attacks really were on. But they noticed the youth coming together instead of fighting. And then you saw at our events, some of the parents started, you know, joining together. Community other organizations started coming. The main one I had the most problem with were the churches.
Yeah.
But they started coming out of their four walls. They did their own thing. But they started coming out. It didn't matter if they didn't support me or not. Just that they were coming out of their four walls. You know what I'm saying? And going into the communities and meeting those where they're at. And so if I had done my part, if I didn't do my part, I know I did that part in helping change the lives of so many youth. And so the gentrification I would like to touch on. I was in Detroit, Michigan, and I saw how they gentrified. I saw how they gentrified in Detroit with the redlining. They didn't give the people, you know, the minority people, the loans that they needed to rebuild their house, the red zoning, and the division. They put people in position that, you know, fits their, were back their agenda, and they did work gentrification in Detroit. When I moved back to Connecticut, I saw they move in the same way. Yeah, they take crafty counsel against the people of God. Yes, they were moving the same way, and I was trying to warn the people. They're moving like they moved in Detroit. So
yeah, and the two demographics that you saw this happening to was mostly the African Americans and the Hispanics, is what you said?
Yes, ma'am. But they first, the Hispanic against the African Americans in order to fulfill their agenda. So they had to divide first.
So by writing your book, If I Had a Hammer, what would you say was the purpose of your book?
The purpose of my book basically is what Christ had set out to do. He set out to build relationship. But my book was to expose the system as it is, so people can know. Like, you know, a lot of people who didn't understand my book, it opened their eyes to what they didn't see before. And so now, a lot of people calling me say, I see now what you're talking about.
Because you educated them. You opened up their minds.
Yes, ma'am. You know, they didn't understand it because these people who they thought were their friends were the very same ones that were stabbing them in the back.
Yeah, I saw you had a video about that. I saw you posted something about people who are fake and phony.
I could be talking about idiots.
and you meant it in the way that people go to church and they try to network even in the church, but they don't support each other's businesses, and they're fake and phony. And you're saying to live your faith.
That's right.
That if you say something, you should do it. If you care about your neighbor, really care about your neighbor from your heart, don't just say it with your lips.
That is correct. That is correct, Cedar. That is absolutely correct. We have to walk the walk. We have to talk the talk. We got to be about His business, or there is no business, like Jesus said when He was 12. Don't you know I'm about my Father's business? He said that to His mother. We got to be about His business. Now, we have governments that, I live in Virginia. Government here, they still, you know, is trying to back morals. you know? So I'm like, well, God, why you led me from out of, you know, Connecticut to Virginia, you know? It was a safety. It was I was in a covenant now. And so it's like he was providing safety for me while I was here so I can have a breather, because this was years of long suffering for me. And I just needed a moment just to,
breathe. Yes. So one of the most inspirational things that I saw when I was in Chicago is the top floor of the Chicago Library talked about almost what you're talking about now. I think yours is a little more eloquent, but it was about the neighborhood basically taking their cities back. And Margaret Mead had said something, and big placard posted on the wall, and I won't get it exactly right, but it's basically, don't ever underestimate a group of really driven people to do wonderful things, right? That we can all do that. And one of the things that I wanted you to make sure that our listeners heard was, what would you say to communities in America on taking their communities back? You know, you saw it because, and you were living it and all of those things, but other folks, they might have a different experience. What would you tell them?
One person at a time. You see the need of any individual or group of people or even a community. You start with one person, you know? And so the need of our community, that they lack, our community lack their identity. And so if you're lost and you're being taught, not being taught our history, we're going to schools to be indoctrinated instead of telling the truth about our history. Did not start in 1619. It started in the beginning. And I'm not going to go deep into that, but if our youth knew who they were and who they are and who they belong to, they would stand up with their head held high with great pride, dignity, and respect. Now, I say that to say this. If you have a root and you have a flower, that flower is not going to blossom unless the root is grounded. And when the stems come up, they come up strong. And then when the stems come up strong, it starts to bear fruit on that branch, or even the flower will start to blossom. We can't blossom if we don't know our roots.
You are so correct. I was just going to say, what you're talking about is what we talk about a lot on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We talk about the sense of belonging and the foundation for family. But in this case, you're saying it's not just a family you're born with, it's your community. Everyone needs to take pride in their community, pride in their actions, and pride in each other, and look out for each other from the heart.
Amen. It has to be. You nailed it, Miss Sita. It has to be from the heart. Now, the power structure, and I'm going to piggyback on what you're saying, Miss Sita. The power structure in the community is the family, the church, and the school. Now, these are the structure. Now, what they've taken out in community was the chief cornerstone that held the community up. And when you start taking out the chief cornerstones in the schools, how do you think that structure is going to stand? It's not going to be able to withhold. It's going to fall. It's falling before our eyes. You know, they've taken the chief cornerstone out in the church, where the church is not teaching the whole truth. I call it prescription gospel. When you go to the hospital, go to your doctor, and the doctor pretty much tell you, let me give you this prescription, and you go home and you feel, in 24 hours you feel back depressed, in 24 hours you feel lonely, but when you go to the other doctor, and the doctor say, hey, you big, you have to push back from the table, you know, they tell you the truth. We don't want to hear the truth. We'll go back to that doctor that gave us the prescription. That's what's going on in these churches. We go back to the churches. That's making our ears feel good. That's not teaching sin. That's not convicting us. And Christ convicted us, but he did it with love, too, on top of it. He had a sword. He was the sword of truth. People want to only see one side of him. He had several sides of him. So why the churches are not stepping up and teaching? The church's job to teach our kids who we are. Yeah. I really don't want to, you know, that's the government.
I always say, Miss Connie, I always say that I like the New Testament God better, but I think we need the Old Testament God a little more.
That's true in this day and age, because he didn't play.
Yeah, he had a hammer, all right. He had a hammer. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with author Connie Johnson, who's taking the time to call in today from Virginia. she wrote a book called If I Had a Hammer. And boy, if she had a hammer, she would use it. So Connie, you were also instrumental in introducing and having a bill passed, House Bill 5424, in March of 2020. Tell our listeners a little bit about this bill.
Yes, House Bill 5124. And it's landlords have to inform tenants that their house is in foreclosure. See, I was living in a house where his house was pretty much sold for money a month after, but he was still collecting money. He was still, he wasn't doing any, he did one repair, but rest of that, I didn't hear from him. He didn't do any more repairs. And so he wanted some more money, and they had put an auction sign up. And I'm like, hold on, wait a minute, help me make sense of this. Auction sign up, you're asking for money, you're not doing repairs. What's going on? And so basically, he took me to court, and I was presenting all the facts in the court, but they still ruled in his favor. I went to appellate court. I went to the state legislation. Christopher, he was our state representative because I pretty much moved to Stratford. He helped out in Stratford so much, and he introduced my bill to the state legislation. They found my story so
compelling.
Yes. And so they left me. When I went there, they didn't put my name on the list, the top. So my daughter was smart enough, God bless her soul, Kiana Johnson. She went up to the podium to double check to see if my name was there. She said, my mother's name is not there. They put my name, and I was last. I waited till 5 o'clock. I was there around 9 in the morning. I was the last one to speak. But when the chairperson, he kept on asking attorneys about my case because he experienced the same thing. You know, I said, look at God. He experienced the same thing. He talked about his experience. And so that bill was passed, and I was in appellate court as well. And so they tried to convince me that bill wasn't passed. If you look in the docket, you're going to see everything. And so they were, with that case, because I put the evidence in the book, the judges had their hands tied behind their back. They were trying to rule in the plaintiff's favor, but because I put the evidence in the book, let it throw out the case, you know? And so, yes, that bill is to help individuals that they have to first, anybody who's having troubles like that, they go to the courts, give the courts the money. They didn't have a system set up.
Well, that's awesome that you did that, because we hear stories of that all the time. And, you know, so many families are one step away from homelessness. So many families are in that exact situation like what you described. And once that house is sold and they tell you, you got to go. But so now, in addition to that, you are also a residential counselor for a regional network, and you've been there since 2002, and it's called Young Life?
Actually, I was a residential counselor for Regional Network of Programs, and I was in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And then I was a counselor for Young Life, Bridgeport Young Life. Yes.
Well, I tell you, we, America and the people in Connecticut and Virginia, we owe you a lot of gratitude, because you're one of those people that actually put your money where your mouth is. And I want to go back really quick when you talked about the church and the people not stepping up to do what they're supposed to be doing, and just a lot of them just talk and not action. It reminded me oftentimes a lot of the places of worships have begun operating like a business. And I think that's what happened. The community church, the community school, we used to have a feel that they actually belong to the community, that you could go there in times of sorrow and distress and happiness and joy, and you could read God's word no matter what religion you are. But somehow it now feels as though when you get in there, it doesn't have that small town feel anymore. And I think that's what you were trying to tell us.
Indeed, even in families, because our family was a ministry. The Brown family, we had a great matriarch and patriarch who had us on our knees. Friends who were friends because we had each other. Then one starts moving on up, going to college, getting indoctrinated. And I'm not against college. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But the system, if you're not strong-minded and you don't know the word of God, you can't rightly divide the word of truth, you can't get caught up in the indoctrination. And so we started looking down on each other. More about business than money. That's what's going on in the church. More about business than money.
Well, you know what it is? We live in a world where so many people are just greedy. And I think the greed takes over no matter what walk of life you come from. So that's when you need the family and the church and the elders. You need them to offer guidance and support and hook people and bring them back, like our friend Danny here with the fish hook. You hook them and you bring them back to the church. You bring them back to the mosque. You bring them back to the synagogue. And you somehow try your best to show people the way to live. Because at the end of life, we all leave. We don't take a U-Haul with us that has concrete and steel in it.
That's right.
You know, we leave with the good name we left behind, and we leave with the good character that we left behind for the next generation. So, Connie, you know what? I tell you, I wish I had more time to talk to you, but you also were on radio yourself. You were back on community radio on WVOF 88.5 FM, and you promoted your mission of pursuing your goals, your dreams, and doing all of it while walking in your faith. I mean, you're amazing.
That sounds good. I didn't realize. You make us sound so good.
Yeah, I'm looking at your bio, and I'm like, wow, how many things did this woman do? Because I think that's why you like radio so much, because you're able to talk to us. But Ellen is looking at me now, and she's telling me that our time is up for this segment. So I tell you, for what you did to rescue so many individuals and families and bring them back into reality, we really appreciate you.
Thank God be the glory. Thank you, Nishita. Thank you, Representative from the state of Florida. nice talking with you both.
Both. And it was great having you, sharing the airwaves with you. We are going to have all of this information posted within 24 hours. It'll be out. So make sure that you listen to this, re-listen to the interview if you missed it. And we'll be right back after these messages with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, Connie, I just have to correct you. Our state representative could not make it because she had a meeting. So she's going to be calling in the second segment. The lady you were talking with is my co-host, Ellen O'Neill. But we will make sure that our state rep hears this segment. We will tell her about it, and hopefully she'll listen. But I'll talk to you later.
Oh, Ellie, I'm so sorry. My
it's all fine. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you. Call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment
advisor. There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over the fabulous world, Miss Ellen, on the web.
That's right. www.1510wwbc.com. You can hit the Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we archive the shows and put them out on our website, which is cedamediainc.com, and as well as our Facebook pages. Of course, there's two or three of those, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and Sita Media Inc. as well. And then, of course, Sita's page. What a fantastic first segment with Miss Connie Johnson. If I Had a Hammer, calling in from Connecticut, taking back
Virginia.
Her
community. Born Virginia. In Connecticut, called in That's from right. Connecticut. She wrote that book. She got a bill passed in the legislative body in Connecticut.
Yeah.
For the renters and homeowners and all that. Mm-hmm. And she wrote such a wonderful book about helping her community.
That's right. And imagine someone that was homeless in 2015 accomplishing all of that in a few short years.
Shining example of
exactly.
resilience, right?
Yes.
So our second segment is with my friend Rita Harris, State Representative for Orlando District 44. And Ellen, she is such an awesome lady. I met her quite a few times. And when you think about people who go out and put their money where their mouth is because they want to help their community, I think of Rita and I think of course, Anna Ishkamani and all my friends mm-hmm. who actually took the activism to the next level and ran for office. And Rita went to school at Valencia College. Rita, you know what? You're on the phone. I'm going to let you tell our listeners a little bit about you instead of reading off South Mountain Center of the Arts and Phoenix College and Valencia College and born in December 18th in Queens, New York and all that good stuff. I'm going to let you talk to our listeners and tell them a little bit about yourself here on Sita and Friends.
Hi, Sita. Hi, Ellen. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. So, yes, my name is Representative Rita Harris. I proudly serve House District 44 in that South Orange County. We have some amazing communities like Hunters Creek and Meadow Woods and Williamsburg. I got my start, I would say, in advocacy. I was a volunteer at Planned Parenthood in high school back in Phoenix, Arizona. And we actually it was called Positive Force Players. And what we did is we wrote skits ourselves as teenagers at the time. That we felt kids were dealing with. And then we would go out and perform these skits in high school. And we covered all sorts of topics, everything from drunk driving to even relationship abuse and things like that. So that's where I got my start in advocacy. I had my daughter, as a lot of people know because I'm really open about it, she had a really complicated form of OCD, so I spent a lot of time with her, raising her, and also advocating for better awareness of mental health, especially when it comes to BIPOC communities. My husband is Black, my daughter is Black, and so there's a lot of work that needs to be done in Black and Brown communities to make sure that people have access to mental health care, and so I did a lot of that, and then I got involved in local politics, and before you know it, I decided to run, and I ran, and here I am.
Yeah, and you were elected to the Florida House of Representatives in 2022, and we want to give you a round of applause for that because it was not easy. I know with all the redistricting and gerrymandering going on there, it's a difficult job. And so
you knocked on so many doors and you were seen and heard. And one of the things that people got from speaking with you is that you actually cared. You cared about the community and people could see through that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I have lived in that community for 20 years, ever since we moved to Florida. And it's an amazing community. It is one of the most culturally diverse communities, I would say, in Central Florida. And we have people from all over the country, from all over the world that live there. We have people who have all sorts of personal and religious beliefs. And I really felt like they needed a champion up there, especially right now, as so many communities are really feeling like they're being, targeted, that they really needed a champion who was going to stand up and advocate for them. And I really feel very honored that they did send me up there, and I'm excited to go back.
Yeah, and you are on so many committees. Your committee, tell us a little bit about your committee assignments, and how do you get assigned to committees such as the ones you are on, the ethics and elections and open government subcommittees, the infrastructure and tourism. You're a freshman and you've got quite a few assignments, transportation and you have children and families and senior subcommittees. How do you get on these committees? And it's perfect for you, by the way.
Well, thank you. So actually we are given a form and we select our top three committees we would like to be on, and then they have us prioritize down, to what would be our least, priority committee. And so I'm very grateful. I was given all the committees that I asked for. As I said, raising my daughter and knowing about, how mental illness really impacts the development of children, I really wanted to be in children, family, and seniors. I also helped take care of my grandfather before he passed away. So it was really important to me that I was in that community so I could advocate for our most vulnerable communities, but also being, my district has all of Universal in it and has SeaWorld. It has part of the iDrive district. So I really felt like it was really also important for me to be in the infrastructure and tourism appropriation subcommittee so that, we can make sure that dollars are being invested in our tourism community and also being invested in the communities that really keep tourism alive in Central Florida and in all of Florida, to be honest.
Well, I tell you, the 56% of the vote you received, you are really working for the people. And I know that everything just wrapped up in Tallahassee. So let's chat a little bit. There were some wins and there were some losses and there were some compromised things that happened. So let's talk a little bit. What happened with immigration?
Yeah, so the immigration bill, there were actually groups that were against it that probably found themselves to be odd, allies. The business community was very against it. It makes it very difficult for them. They're concerned they're going to lose workers. And the thing about it is the bill as it is right now is actually a lot better than it was. The original bill was a lot harsher and a lot more punitive. So a lot of advocacy groups were really able to kind of get some of the most harmful language taken out of the bill, but there's still a lot there that's harmful. And I want to be clear, and I want listeners to know, too, that things like in a hospital, hospitals have to ask what an immigration status is, but people are not required to answer. So we want to make sure that if somebody doesn't have a status, but they need to get medical health care, that they go and seek it. The hospitals have to ask, but they don't have to answer. They're allowed to refuse. I think that's something really important that people need to know.
Right, and I think that bill is it State Bill 1718. If employers knowingly hire undocumented people, that they could get into trouble because they want you to use the E-Verify system.
Yes, exactly.
Wasn't that being used before? I mean, at the end of the day, we're all human beings, right? And people right. come here because they want to work, they want to contribute, they want to be part of the society. We're all human beings. But as far as I know, we were all already doing E-Verify. So why was there a big push to put that back in again?
Exactly. That was a lot of pushback as well, was the E-Verify and the fact that it is already used. So why are we digging in on this? And, immigrants play such an important role in our economy, whether it is, tech jobs, high-dollar tech jobs, or whether they're doing construction jobs. They play a huge and important part in our economy, which is why the business community, came out and was against it, because they know the value that immigrants add. immigrants are a part of this society, whether they are status or not, whether they have a documented status or not. And they, like you said, they should be treated as humans and not have a target on them, especially in a time when people are feeling so vulnerable.
Yes. And the other thing I noticed that happened, one of the takeaways from Tallahassee as well, was the vouchers, universal vouchers. So are you saying that somebody like, I think I read this on the web, that Tiger Woods, if he wanted to apply for a voucher for his kids, even though he does not need it, he can actually get a voucher?
Yes, he could. And the biggest issue that a lot of us had with those vouchers is that these private schools don't run with the same rules as a public school. And so they can discriminate. They don't have to, for instance, accept an IEP. So a student with disabilities who has a special IEP, these private schools don't necessarily have to take them. They can discriminate based on, nation of origin, where someone comes from, or what they believe, what their personal religious beliefs are. And I feel like if you're going to take public money, and to be clear, I know a lot of people that put their kids in private schools, and I respect people do have the choice. They have a choice. They can put their children in private school, they can homeschool, or they can go in public school. My biggest concern with that was taking public school funds that would go to schools that don't have to follow the same rules that public schools have to. And again, they don't have to have the same type of inspections in the buildings. A public school has to pass an inspection to show that the electricity, the plumbing, everything is safe. These private schools don't have to do that. Nor do they have to hire faculty and staff that are credentialed the same way a public school is. So there's a lot of concerns with that bill. In addition to it being a coupon for people that already can afford private school, there's a lot of concerns that some private schools will pop up and actually kind of prey on people and not give the kids the same type of education that they deserve.
Yeah, and I know so many of us, we would say from the bottom of our heart that, we want all children to have a quality public education. Mm-hmm. And of course, we understand those parents that want schools of choice and homeschooling, mm-hmm. and who wants to send their kid to a private school. But it used to be, if you wanted your child to go to a private school, you work for that. But mm-hmm. now the taxpayers are having to foot the bill, so to speak, for the parents who want their kid to go to private school. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But at the same time, where do we strike a healthy balance where we don't take money out of public schools and put it into private? And I think that's when we all have to worry, because it becomes, education becomes big business. And people have to be careful, because we do need an educated nation moving forward. We cannot have public education being sold as a business to the highest bidder.
Absolutely. And as I said, if they are going to take public funds and give it to a private school, then these private schools have to have the same type of rules that the public schools have. I think it's only fair.
That's right. Now, the other thing, and I know people don't like to speak about it, but a woman's right to choose as well. And that's a topic that, of course, a lot of people feel strong about. I mean, it's a cultural thing. It's a right for women, but unfortunately we're watching that play out in so many states. And I have to say that, people like you and I and so many other women and men, people are saying, let's continue to promote comprehensive sex education as well as academic, trade, military, whatever it is. How can we help more people to understand the power of their vote does count when it comes to women's rights and things like that?
Yeah, I think it's really important to kind of lean in about how paramount it is to vote. I often tell people, the further down the ballot the person is, the more impact they have on your day-to-day life. So we talk a lot about what's happening in Washington, and we talk about presidential elections, but the real offices that really impact you are state houses, county commissions. And I think, really kind of, leaning in and letting people know that who they vote for to represent them up in Tallahassee can really play a huge impact on whether they have the right views. And in this instance, we still have until 15 weeks because right now that you know the ban from last session is still tied up in court. But once that's decided, you know, we're not going to have access to abortion after 6 weeks, and most people don't know that they're pregnant at that time. And then it also has an impact on people who are wanting to continue a pregnancy. You know, I've heard of women who, you know, were pregnant and, you know, passed 6 weeks, and were afraid that perhaps they were miscarrying, and doctors were very concerned about, you know, what they were allowed and weren't allowed to do. And so it has an impact even on women who are wanting to have an elective abortion, but it also has an impact on women who want to continue the pregnancy. But if something, you know, heaven forbid, were to happen, you know, doctors need to know clearly what they can and cannot do within the law. And right now it is very, very ambiguous. And it's gonna have an impact on also people that want to continue their pregnancy and unfortunately are finding themselves in a medical situation. And I think that's important to talk about too, to frame it in that way as well. It's going to impact all women and anybody that can get pregnant.
Well, this is where, you know, Ellen and I and our guests that come on a show, we all talk about kitchen table topics, right? This is where women, men, aunties, uncles, cousins, friends, neighbors, this is where people sit down with each other. And of course, we notice that so many families just don't sit down and talk anymore. But this is, we're living in a crucial time when people need to get back to their kitchen table or their steps or wherever they talk and talk about things like financial literacy, talk about college, talk about trade, talk about the military, to join or not to join, pros and cons. And yes, talk about children. How many children do you want? How many children do you already have? What are you going to do if you got pregnant? Do you have a job? Do you have a daycare? I mean, so many people encourage young women to carry their children, but there aren't enough workers in the daycares. There aren't enough people caring for the children. So if we're going to encourage a woman to carry a child because somebody don't believe in the termination of a pregnancy, at some point we have to have the conversations. Who is going to mind the child? Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The impact, like you said, reproductive care is, you know, it is a financial issue, it's an economic issue, it's a health issue, it encompasses a lot. And as you said, it's important to have these conversations, and it's important to talk to people that you don't necessarily agree with and don't necessarily agree with you. I think we've really come siloed into our own little spaces, but, you know, you'd be surprised how many people, when it comes down to it, do support a woman's right to choose, you know, really do it. The basic, at 6 weeks, do support the right for women to make that choice. And I think it's really important for us to have that dialogue so that we can, you know, see how much we have in common, much more than we don't.
Yes, because, you know, the most vulnerable amongst us are the children and the elderly. And once you start speaking to people about, you know, who's caring for the elderly in our nation's nursing homes and ALFs and hospitals, who's caring for the children in the daycare that you just, you know, drop off in the morning and pick up in the evening, it's got to be that the conversation doesn't stop after 9 months of pregnancy, because once that child is born, it does need a place to live, education, healthcare, you know, extracurricular, diapers, food, formula. The child has to live, and God forbid that child has a mental illness. Are we as a nation able to take care of these children? Because they grow up to be adults with mental issues as well. And I think that's the disconnect between the left and the right. The moderates have got to stand up and say, listen, let's talk, let's communicate, because it doesn't end at 9 months of pregnancy.
Yeah, there's a lot to consider, absolutely. And we need to make sure that we're thinking about those things as well.
So, my dear State Rep. Rita Harris, District 44 in Orlando, the last one we want to talk about, I think we have a couple of minutes, is affordable housing. We're watching the gentrification of it and what's going on with the housing and the economics of all of this. What happened in Tallahassee as far as affordable housing? And I heard there was something called the Live Local Act. What is all that about?
Yeah, so that, you know, the Live Local Act, it has some good things in it, and I think, you know, opening up access, giving funding to people to purchase is absolutely part of it, but also it has some things in there that were a little bit problematic. One of them was taking away, you know, a county's right to determine if they needed some sort of rent stabilization measure, which Orange County did vote for. In fact, that rent stabilization measure got more votes than Ron DeSantis. So, you know, it's a bipartisan issue. And unfortunately, that Live Local Act took the power away from the county to do that. And there's also a few concerns about how developers are able to kind of come into neighborhoods and don't need the same type of permission from stakeholders as they did before. And so there's a concern about gentrification and how communities like we have the historic community of Eatonville in Orange County, and that's where Escamani's district, and you know how communities like that, how they develop and how much input now the community has. So it was one of those bills where, you know, I think people were pretty divided on how they voted, and some people voted because of all the good stuff, and some people voted because of the bad stuff, and you know, it was one of those issues where it's a bill with a lot of things in it, and, you know, people had to make that decision based on their own personal communities and what they would get out of it.
So it's called a Live Local. I was like, why did I write down Live? But anyways, but you know, it does affect so much of the lower-income families, and so many are forced to move out of their neighborhood because of the high cost of living. So I'm glad you guys addressed that, and I think that's one of the things that got support from both sides of the aisle, which is good. We've got to take, I mean, the communities of color, brown and black, we're watching a lot of gentrification in those areas, not just here in Florida, but all over the United States.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's a problem. You know, like you said, I'm originally from New York. I mean, that's a huge issue up in New York that is constant, you know, as people move and they migrate around the city. Unfortunately, historic communities, people do get pushed out. We have to be very intentional about how we grow communities and make sure that the people who made that community what it is, such as with Paramore and Eatonville, they're able to stay in the community as it is. You know, as investments are made into it.
Right. And the last thing, I know we don't have a minute, but, you know, I was at the gym walking the other day and some lady was talking so loud, and I wanted to say to her, please, I don't want to hear about your husband cheating. I don't want to hear about your mother-in-law who's coming to visit. I don't want to hear all your business. But then I'm like, I better be quiet, because now we have a law that people can carry a weapon and you won't even know they've got it. She could shoot me in the parking lot for all I know. So I kept my big mouth shut and I just moved to the other, you know, the other side of the gym. But the thing is, I mean, all these things, they play out in real life, don't they? You have to be careful now.
You do. And I mean, we're living right now in a time where, like I said earlier, people feel very, you know, isolated from each other, and we don't often have conversations with people that we don't agree with. And, you know, you couple that with the fact that we have a stand your ground law, you know, people do feel a little bit, you know, in fear. And so I think that's something also that we need to look at. You know, that was a bill that I did not support. I don't think it's a bill that was needed in this state. We've had two really, really big national, you know, incidents here, tragedies that happened here. And I think that, you know, instead of, you know, making access to firearms easier, we need to make it we shouldn't take away people's guns. That's not what I'm advocating, but we should make sure that people have to at least know how to clean their gun safely.
Right.
They know how to operate a gun safely. And unfortunately, now that's not the case. Those are no longer requirements to own a gun in the state of Florida.
Well, give us your website or a way to contact you if any of our listeners would like to support you in the future, support you now, read about all the great things you're doing. State Representative Rita Harris for District 44 in Orlando. How can we contact you? Because you're amazing, and we're so grateful you ran and got elected. And Danny's giving me the cut, so give us your website.
Rita for Florida, F-O-R, RitaForFlorida.com.
That's awesome. We will make sure that all this information is shared on our website and on our Facebook pages. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing the airwaves with us. Thank you again to all of our listeners to tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Thank you, Rita.